coming soon to own on video and DVD.
That's right, it's Disflix and Tidbits, the Disney podcast about Disney movies from the past, present, and coming soon, and all the little extras in between. I'm your one and only host, Cassie, and what the heck did I just watch? And today is June 19th, 2019, episode 22, Disney Trope Life. Hey Disflix fans, it has been quite a long time, hasn't it, since I addressed you. In the last episode, I stated that I was going to switch up the weekly episode to bi-weekly with the Once I Watched a Disney series on the opposite week, and completely taking away the news section altogether. So this will be the first episode without that long news segment, and we will see if you like that absence of all the movie news, or if you really, really miss it. As always, any suggestions or critiques are welcome to let me know how I'm doing, how much you like this podcast, and if you really want that new section back or not. And going back to missing all of you, I did miss you all. I did miss doing this podcast. I was actually doing the podcast I was just doing Once I Watched a Disney and not addressing you guys one-on-one, you know? I've been incredibly busy in the podcast part of things. I have many guests signed up for Once I Watched a Disney, which I really, really love. I love the fact that people do enjoy this series. It was kind of like just a weird whim of an idea, and I'm just glad that people like took off with it and want to do more and want to be a part of it. I'm actually getting a return guest for Once I Watched Disney. And those who have been on before, you're welcome to come back again. I don't mind. I love talking to you then. I would love to talk to you again. I keep rhyming, so that's why I'm laughing. I'm sorry about that. So with all those guests signed up, all the movies have been picked. So the list is open for more people to look at to pick their movie if they like. I'm just in the middle of scheduling all the recordings here. Not only that, but I have been featured on a podcast along with being a guest on a podcast since the last time I spoke to you, Disflickers. No, that doesn't sound right. I went for it and it just did not sound right. I apologize. I will never utter that term for you listeners ever again. As I was saying, the Hyperion Adventures podcast that is hosted by the very talented hosts Tom and Michelle were celebrating their first year doing their podcast, and they graciously asked me to say a few words to congratulate them, which was such an excellent episode celebrating a year of podcasting over there at Hyperion Adventures, along with like my thoughts and opinions of how I like their podcast, and they also included in that episode how they felt about going to Disney's Galaxy's Edge for the first time, which was very interesting, and I just can't wait to go myself. I was also a guest on Keenan Rachel's podcast, Part of Our World. Rachel, as you know, has been on Disflix before. She was part of the Once I Watched a Disney series where we watched a Goofy movie together. And I was asked to be a guest on their podcast to discuss Disney's Aladdin, the live-action one that came out in the end of May. So that was a couple episodes back. I would recommend listening to that episode if you want to hear more of my voice, I guess. So you should check it out. Listen to our hot takes about the movie and see what rating we gave it. More podcasting news. The second episode of Let's Go Watch a Star Wars, a collaborating series with Josh of the Disnoids, is being edited right now, so it'll be coming out soon. Josh saw episode 4, A New Hope, and I talked with him on what his overall thoughts of the movie were. So he finally got to see a Star Wars, so we'll finally get to hear how he felt about it. Also, the other podcast I'm a part of, Disney at a Distance, we just released the 50th episode where all of us original dadcasters made it for the celebration. I was in there for probably 15 minutes and then I had to unfortunately leave. I was being called away, but I'm in there. But more importantly, everyone that was there from day one was in that episode, so that was pretty fun. They are also doing a giveaway, so please check that out. They're at Disney Distance on Twitter, and I am just going on everything everywhere soon, folks. With me being a guest on a couple more podcasts in the future, I'm returning on others and collaborating with other hosts with new projects, and it's all happening within this Disney podcast family going on, so I'm really happy about that. There might be a couple podcasts debuting soon where I just might show up. Who knows? You are going to be sick of me if you already aren't sick of me as it is. Yeah, there is just so much going on, so much I want to share with you. All the links to the podcasts and episodes that I mention are, of course, in the show notes. So if you want to check those all out, check all the podcasts out that I mention. Or if you want to hear my wonderful alto-type voice in your ear holes again, keep listening to those episodes that I'm a part of, I guess. So with this new format for Disflix and Tibbits, I kind of wanted to keep something from the old format that was one of my favorites, and that was the box office numbers. I am always interested in the numbers each weekend anyway, so it's kind of like my weekly routine. I love to compare the Disney family-friendly movies and the action comic book movies to everything else that's coming out for each weekend. Especially during the summer, they're always coming out with something new and different. It also helps me be more into the know of what is out. I seem to always space out on some of the movies, and I kind of kick myself for not watching them in the theaters, like Godzilla King of Monsters. It's not a movie I would normally watch, but the trailer was so wonderful. I'm going to try to make it out and see it if I can. I know it's not Disney. This is not Disney. Let's get back to my Disney movie podcast. Let's take a look at those numbers. For the weekend of June 14th through the 16th, ranking in at the 10th spot is Avengers Endgame, holding strong and trying desperately to beat that Avatar record, making $3.7 million in its 8th week. Quick question for you. If you loved or liked it, how many times did you go out to theaters to see it? My husband went 3 times and contemplating a 4th right now. I only went to it once since it made me into an emotional wreck and I was kind of scared to cry out in public again, so I only made it out once. Moving on. Fox's Dark Phoenix, the last of the X-Men franchise under Fox for now, ranked in at 5th with $9.3 million for its 2nd weekend, which is not bad for what the critics are saying. Aladdin is still high up there at 3rd, making over $17 million in its 4th week. Wow, way to go, Aladdin. And topping in at 2nd is The Secret Life of Pets 2 with $24 million plus, and that's in its 2nd week. So that's pretty decent for this kind of movie. And of course, ranking in at number 1 in its opening weekend is Men in Black International with over $30 million. Those are the current Disney entity movies in the theaters as of last weekend, along with top grossing films that movie fans are hankering for right now. Which everything will be, like, smashed into a million pieces come tomorrow night with the premiere of Toy Story 4, which currently the critics and everyone who has watched the pre-screening is just raving about it right now. As of now, Rotten Tomatoes has it at 100%, so who knows what's gonna happen? Oh, we all know what's gonna happen. It's gonna rank to number 1. It's gonna stay there until Lion King comes into theaters. We all know how this works, Disney. We see you. The biggest movie news story of the week that jumped out at me last week wasn't really a piece of news at all, but a big old fat rumor. And you know how Disney fans love a good movie rumor. And that rumor was of the Hercules live action movie. Like I said, it's a rumor. It's not happening. This was claiming that Chris Pratt was signing up to play Hercules, Anna Kendrick as Megara, and Jeff Goldblum as Hades. Then it kind of spiraled, and then I saw other celebrities named for the roles, like Benedict Cumberbatch as Hades, Amber Heard as Megara, It was just obviously very far-fetched news that started a bit of a kerfuffle in Twitter for less than a day, then it went away. But this isn't true. If you look at any upcoming Disney movies, in the ones that have been greenlit and named, Hercules is not listed on there. So it's not happening, whether you like it or not. What is on there is James and the Giant Peach. What is on there is James and the Giant Peach. But unfortunately, no Hercules. And even if they did, I doubt they would use any of the celebs that were listed in those little fake news bits. I doubt they would, except maybe Jeff Goldblum. I could see that, but it probably will not happen. I would think that they would be searching for like a younger cast of actors and actresses with like a Greek background, because that's what Disney is kind of doing. They did that with Aladdin, where they had mostly a Middle Eastern cast as Aladdin, culturally appropriate type casting. So I hope they continue to do that if they ever do a Hercules live action. But I kind of doubt that they will, because of the fact the animated film was very stylized. And if you turn it into a live action remake, you're gonna lose that stylized look that everybody kind of liked, along with the music. Because it's really hard to find that great talent and great singer all at the same time. So, I can just see that stylized animation being replaced with cool camera tricks and CGI, and that will just take away from how beautiful that film was, and it just wouldn't be a Disney movie. It would just kind of be like 300 or a Troy type of style. But yeah, I've been going on way too long for this. It's just a rumor. It probably will never happen. Those are my thoughts on it. So, question of the week: who would you love to see play Hercules or Meg or Hades if Disney ever remade it? Which they won't, but let me know what you think. So, another thing that I wanted to highlight about the podcast, I guess this could be technically podcast news, and I should have said it earlier, but I've never mentioned this before. I have 4 reviews on iTunes for Disflix and Tidbits, and I just want to thank those 4 people from the bottom of my heart for giving me reviews, 5-star reviews at that. I don't think I deserve that, but I thank you guys so much, and I just wanted to say these reviews out here and want to thank you personally. I have Patrick Cox 2, who said, "Superb show. When it comes to news coverage, topics, and movie reviews, it does not get much better than the show. It's so smooth and fun and anchored by amazing hosts." Thank you so much for that. This is more than I deserve, because I'm just a Disney nerd trying to do a podcast by myself, which is kind of unheard of right now. But thank you so much. Next one is by Tron0603. "This podcast didn't take long for me to follow with interest. Cassie's presentation is professional, she has a great voice, and her content covers a wide range of Disney films from Star Wars, MCU, and of course, the Disney Animated Studios. She has a wealth of knowledge, does her homework, and presents her material in a lighthearted, organized format without being tedious or overly fangirl. She loves Disney all right, but she keeps it real and doesn't gush, a quality I find rare in Disney podcasts. The show is well worth any Disney film fan's time. Paul J. Hale, the Disney Story Origins podcast." Now, oh my gosh, so this is just a wonderful review. Not only are you gushing about me, which I can't take criticism that well, but thank you so much. The Disney Story Origins podcast, I've mentioned before in another episode, and is one of my favorite podcasts of all time. Just like the title says, the Disney Story Origins, he not only talks about these origins, but puts all the origins together along with the Disney story all at one time, going in progression of how all these stories come together. I'm explaining it really, really bad, but please check this podcast out. It is super wonderful, and I can't believe Paul likes me. He really likes me. But thank you so much, Paul. Thank you for your glowing review. It means so much to me. My other review is by Disney Fan for Life. I love this podcast. I really enjoy listening to this podcast. I love how Cassie covers one of my favorite things about Disney, and that's movies. She makes every show fun, and I always look forward to the next episode. Definitely subscribe to this fun podcast if you haven't already. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is Trent from the Disney DNA podcast, which I really appreciate that he gave me a review. I gave him a review too. Just podcast family looking out for each other. So thank you so much. And finally, this was my very first review of all time, and I have to thank him so much for giving me a review right off the bat when he first listened to it. iTunes Needs More Stars by Jordan Gasly. I can only give this podcast 5 stars when in fact it deserves 50 stars. Don't sleep on this podcast. Cassie is awesome and this podcast is awesome. Tell your friends and subscribe. Thank you, Jordan. If you don't know, Jordan has been on my podcast as well. He was a part of Disney at a Distance with me at one time, but he broke away and went with Jeremy to do the Magic Gasly Power Hour that is on the same podcasting feed as Disney at a Distance at DizTwit Network. That was very confusing. Look for DizTwit Network on any podcasting feed and you will find the Magic Gasly Power Hour. It's a really good podcast about two friends that are just very entertaining, so please check them out. So thank you to those who gave me a review, a 5-star review at that. I can't believe that. Thank you. The fact that people like my podcast just keeps me going, keeps me doing all this content, and just thank you. How many more times can I say that? So if you remember, I was highlighting podcasts in the past, something I said I would continue doing here in the future. If you also have a podcast of any kind, I could feature you in a future episode with your podcast promo on here. Or even if you want to recommend a podcast, you can email me at dyslexiaandtidbits@gmail.com. If there is no promo, I will definitely take a listen to your podcast and try to highlight you here on my Dysflicks and Tidbits podcast here, because I love podcasts. I love meeting new friends through the podcasting world, and this is a hard thing to do, especially just for a hobby, and I appreciate anyone who starts a podcast, so please send me your podcast. So for this episode, I would like to highlight the Disnoids, hosted by my good friends Rob and Josh, who I've chatted with and interacted a lot with here. He's part of the Disney podcast family that we have going on and talking about all the time. Heck, I'm even doing a collaboration series. Hashtag plug. Let's go watch a Star Wars. The Disnoids is such a fun and informative podcast by two brothers that have some great interest from Disney to Universal to rock and roll to horror movies and so much more. One thing is for sure, you will always get passion from them. This is the Disnoids.
Hey, this is Josh.
And I'm Rob.
And we are from the Disnoids podcast. Join us each week as we try to keep our random ramblings in check.
That's right. Dive into our cauldron with the sweetness of recipes from theme parks to movies to music to comics to any and everything we can talk about.
Our jibber jabber knows no boundaries, but our expertise in these fields will be sure to make your ear holes smile.
That's right. Follow us each week with our episodic adventures with a side of sarcasm to lead us through the magical forest of pop culture.
You can find us where all podcasts are found: iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, and even on Facebook. Just search The Disnoids.
That's right, my wonderful, wonderful friends. As always, stay metal-y.
So for this week's episode, I wanted to do something a little more fun than dissecting each Disney era villain that I've done in the past. I want to explore Disney tropes, one in particular for this episode, and I may delve into others in the future episodes. Who knows? Depends on if you really like this or not. So I don't know. We'll see how this goes. Now, we all know that tropes in movies refer to plot devices, themes, or basic elements that are commonly used in cinema. Most films rely on tropes to move the story along without adding more explanation, whether it be through the characters or the plot. Over time, when a trope becomes too popular, it tends to be cliché, and we as the audiences tend to predict what will happen next because of the use of these tropes in the film. To quote George Bluestein, who wrote novels into film, film tropes are enormously limited compared to the literary tropes, so we tend to notice them more often when we watch a movie. So, for example, in horror films, there tends to be almost always a tray of torture devices somewhere in the film. Now, this is a very small trope, but you can always count on the torture devices somewhere in that movie. In action films, the main character casually walking away towards the camera as a cool explosion goes off behind them, as if the brunt force of the explosion doesn't knock them right on their butts. We see that a lot, and it has been made fun of, too, sometimes in some movies. In teen romance films, especially in the 90s, the main character, who is a nerd, gets instantly more attractive when they get rid of their glasses. Yeah, that happens a lot in the 90s. And with most Disney films, they lived happily ever after. Now, this is a very, very common trope, but this is not the trope that I will be discussing. I want to discuss a trope we all know about, but never knew actually had a name. A trope that Walt Disney Pictures likes to use constantly, even in modern animated films. But we would instantly think of an entire movie if we had to name a time it has been used. Have you been stumped yet? This trope is called the acid sequence. You instantly thought of Alice in Wonderland, didn't you? Because of the nature of the film being filmed with nonsensical things and beings happening throughout the film, and they're not having much of a plot other than what's going on in Alice's imagination with bright colors and floating teeth, and also paired with that 1967 psychedelic rock hit White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane, with obvious lyrics alluding to the Alice Adventures in Wonderland novels, and her drinking and taking pills to change size and other drug use, we kind of are conditioned to think that the 1951 Alice in Wonderland and all its weirdness is just one big drug trip. Alas, the acid sequence is not found in this film. Let me explain the trope a little bit more. The Disney acid sequence trope is mostly in that of a musical number, and as we know, with most of the Disney animated films, along with some live actions, are mostly musicals. With a few exceptions like from the post-Renaissance era, Atlantis and Treasure Planet, I'm looking at you. During at least one of the musical numbers from these famously popular films are where animation or live action kind of forget how everything happens in the world of the movie, and things get a little bit abstract to cater to the music and the situation. Things are weird and are screwy, and you tend to think, am I on acid? Well, maybe not in all cases, but you will notice that the characters in these musical numbers aren't where they should be. The background and the surroundings are completely different and otherworldly. Like, they themselves are probably on an acid trip. Things just happen that may be too impossible for them. Are you getting where I'm coming from now? Have you thought of an example of this trope from a Disney movie that you may have seen recently? Well, I'm going to go back to the very beginning with Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, for the first time that it was used in a Disney movie. Snow White is singing her little heart out, picking flowers at the edge of the woods until she came across a lost little blue bird. Unbeknownst to her, the huntsman comes up behind her to enact the request of the evil queen, to stab Snow White in the heart. Snow White screams out. The huntsman grows a conscience to follow through with the deed and yells at Snow White to run.
Run away.
And she runs straight into the woods. The music builds up as if all the music builds up as all the inanimate objects of the woods rise up and attack Snow White from every angle. The orchestra plays louder as all Snow White sees are evil eyes around her, as she spins in a fury of fear and finally collapses into tears. That scene right there is a very trippy one. Snow White is actually hallucinating from fear and adrenaline that the woods were coming alive to get her. It may not have been a musical, as I explained, but the orchestra that accompanies this scene helps play along with the emotions that are being enacted here. It's one of the very calm examples of the acid sequence. Another movie that uses this trope in a more surreal and bizarre way is in Dumbo with the Pink Elephant song. This song is what probably made this trope become more widely used in Disney animated films. Well, I said probably. Fantasia is most likely the culprit here. Over 5 minutes of this craziness is caused by a baby elephant accidentally drinking way too much champagne. We are introduced into the most bizarre hallucinations of pink bubbled elephants parading and singing about the fact that they are everywhere. What was mostly likely the animators stretching the already short running time, and probably flexing their creativity and talent, we are given an acid sequence that is most commonly referred of this trope and used for nightmare fuel for little kids. So was that the example of acid sequence trope that you thought of earlier? Or was it a more recent animated film? This trope can sometimes be hard to spot here and there, but it's actually a very broad trope that doesn't necessarily mean a drug trip or hallucination that I just explained with the last two examples. It's not always literal, and you might miss it or not think of one of the musical numbers as one. Let's go into one of all of our favorite Disney eras, the Renaissance era, where this trope is used quite a bit. Now try and remember The Lion King. Can you think of a moment where the acid sequence trope is used? If you guessed I Just Can't Wait to Be King, you just got 10 points for your house. If you didn't guess that and you're just scratching your head, just think about that musical sequence a little bit more. Nala and Simba are plotting a way to get rid of the hornbill bird out of their fur so they can run away to the elephant graveyard. So Simba does what any future king would do, sing an I Want song, and it starts with that pounce. As soon as Simba pounces in front of Zazu and the drum starts the beat of the music, now before you start singing out your solo, remember what the background is doing. It instantly changes to bright reds and oranges, and the animation changes slightly to be more vibrant and stylized. There are stylized silhouettes, everyone running everywhere, but never going anywhere. All the African animals are singing and dancing, and for the finale, they all stack up on each other. It's a distraction, yes, but things are happening that wouldn't normally happen because of the tone of the music and the background drastically changed to fit this distraction. Something that none of the other songs really do. Now, you can argue be prepared, but nothing out of the ordinary is happening there. Scar lives where a warm springs is, which explains the geysers. The green color could be attributed to the lighting of the cave. The hyenas aren't dancing around or doing something different than they normally do. I Just Can't Wait to Be King changes the whole color scheme, and the animals are participating in something that they wouldn't normally do, like grazing and ignoring the cubs. The Lion King sequels, both 2 and 1.5, also have an acid sequence in their films. With 2, the Yupendi song is the one there, with the stylized look and colors just like the original. And in 1.5, Timon's That's All I Need, where he literally flies on a cloud and hallucinates about a place that he really wants to go to, by showing a sequence of props sliding into view. It's something that wouldn't actually be there. It's a hallucination, and that's what the acid sequence is. And these are examples of very subtle ways that the acid sequence kind of worms its way into these films. Yet there are many out there. In Pocahontas, Colors of the Wind is another example. Or is it? The colors and the stylized scenes make me think it is. How she goes through each place to show John Smith about nature doesn't correspond with the different changes of daylight throughout the song. It kind of makes you think, where was she? Where did they go, and how long did it take? But it can also be very difficult to interpret for others. Sometimes the trope can be quite literal. take Pixar's The Good Dinosaur. Now, this isn't a musical number at all, but there is a scene where Arlo and Spot eat a fruit together and start to actually experience an acid trip, thus resulting in a very weird and trippy experience for them both. This was used in humor as opposed to moving the plot along that many times the acid sequence is used as. My favorite examples of this trope are in, actually, princess movies. Princess and the Frogs has two of them, with Dig a Little Deeper and Friends on the Other Side. Tangled is another one that has one, and it's with Mother Knows Best, which you may argue that it isn't, but how it's done in that world, it doesn't seem plausible. And finally, in Moana, with You're Welcome. I mean, who doesn't love that one? That is an example of the acid sequence trope. Now, the acid sequence trope is not necessarily just used in Disney movies. It's called a trope for a reason. Many a movie has used this type of editing trickery to convey a feeling or disruption to a character or plot. Think 2001 Space Odyssey, with Dave going through the Stargate with the flashing of contrasting colors flying past the camera while cutting back to a close-up of his eyeball. Another blast from your past, if you're a 90s kid, All Dogs Go to Heaven from 1989. The scene with the song Let's Make Music Together. There's this really odd scene with the alligator, which was very odd. It didn't pertain to the plot at all, and it felt like an acid trip, and it was just over, and nothing happened of it. Another Don Bluth film and princess movie that people hauled onto is Anastasia. It's very subtle, and you can argue about it, but the acid sequence here is when her memories start coming back to her from the ballroom scene, and she's dancing with ghosts. Or her memories? Or hallucinations? Or, if you are into live-action musicals, any of the musical numbers from Chicago, since they're supposed to be in Roxy Hart's head, like a hallucination. I could go on and on about more examples of this trope, and I barely even broke the ice of all the acid sequence in all the Disney movies. There are so many, and they're probably in one of your favorite movies, if I haven't mentioned it yet. So let me know of a Disney acid sequence that I didn't mention that is possibly your favorite or could be very odd to you, that just stands out, that doesn't make sense in the movie. You can tweet me your answer in Twitter at DisflixTidbit or email me at DisflixAndTidbit@gmail.com. And I will definitely give you a shout out in the next episode about your favorite acid sequence. Also, if you did like this trope episode, we'll consider doing another trope episode or doing something along the lines of this where I kind of delve into the history of something and go back and forth between modern day and history if you like it. I'm trying to experiment with more episodes, so please let me know what you like or dislike. So if you have any questions, corrections, suggestions, or comments, or if you want to be a guest on Once I Watched a Disney, you can contact me through Twitter at DisflixTidbit, remember there's no S on the end, or email me at DisflixAndTidbits@gmail.com. I am also on Instagram under DisflixTidbits, and be sure to know the new scheduling is DisflixAndTidbits comes out weekly every other Wednesday. On the other Wednesday, it will be Once I Watched a Disney with Let's Go Watch a Star Wars here in between once a month. So you can find this podcast on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Overcast, Spotify, and TuneIn, or wherever podcasts are found. If there is a podcasting app, or if there is another podcasting app that I am not a part of, please let me know, and I will try to put DisflixAndTidbits on there to help you listen to it easier. And if you would like to support this podcast, please consider leaving me a review on iTunes. Any review will do, just so I know that you are listening. You can also help by retweeting my most recent episode on Twitter or DMing me feedback at DisflixAndTidbit. Till next time, we aren't just watching movies, we're making memories.